You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hello, everybody. This is MLB.com Extras, American League West edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, pinch hitting for Dave Raymond. As we do each and every week, we're going to hit on all the news in the West, a West that is still led by those Houston Astros. We'll hear about their recent power surge from Brian McTaggart. Rangers radio voice Matt Hicks will join us to talk about a Texas team with some big roster decisions coming up. The Angels, they took 2 of 3 from the Astros this week, so they're still holding steady, but they're still looking for some consistency from that offense outside of the red-hot Albert Pujols. Alden Gonzalez will join us to talk about that. Greg Johns will join us to talk about the Mariners, who changed hitting coaches this past week. We'll see if Edgar Martinez can fix what's ailing their bats. And finally, Jane Lee will join us to talk about an A's team that's been playing much better ball as of late and could be changing the trade conversation surrounding that team. So thanks for listening. Away we go. I am joined by Brian McTaggart. Tags, your wedding anniversary plans were almost thrown askew by a 13-inning game on Wednesday. Hopefully that didn't mess you up too much.
No, luckily they start them pretty early out here. But, yeah, it was a long game and a battle of attrition. But, got the anniversary celebrated and now ready to focus on some baseball.
That's a beautiful thing. All right, well, the Astros are coming off consecutive series losses to the Mariners and the Angels. But they have been hitting home runs in bunches lately, as they're prone to do when they're hot. Pretty entertaining, Tags. Pretty entertaining offense when they are rolling the way they have been lately. And they want to keep it rolling, obviously, in a big homestand against the Yankees and Royals here coming up.
Yeah, they lose a couple of series. But, overall, they on the 8-game road trip, they go 4-4. So, take that, hold serve on the road. And you're right, they were bashing home runs again, like you saw earlier in the year. They had a 10-game span where they homered in 10 consecutive games. 9 of those were multiple home run games. And, of course, when you're doing that, it's just very tough to beat this team. But they came back down to earth a little bit yesterday and were shut down. But, yeah, the biggest home stand of the year, I think, coming up for a lot of reasons. I think they need to build on a little momentum at home as they go into the All-Star break. And they have the Yankees and Royals coming in and a couple of teams pushing that are up there in the playoff race as well. And I think we'll get some big crowds. So I think it's going to be a fun week at Minute Maid Park and see how they respond and, take care of business at home, which they've really haven't been able to flex a lot of muscle at home yet.
Well, one guy flexing muscle this season, Luis Valbuena. This is one of those on pace for, don't expect him to do it, but he's on pace to become the first hitter ever to finish the season with more than 40 home runs and a batting average below 200. We've seen power and burst from this guy in the past. I don't know if we've seen it quite this consistent, Tags, but of course it is offset a bit by that batting average. What have you made of Valbuena's season to date?
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. Like you said, 19 home runs. His career high was 16. That was last year with the Cubs. I remember when they traded for him, Jeff Luno was like, he can provide some pop at third base,
right?
16 home runs. And we're like, okay, if he hits 15, 17 home runs. And here we are on June 25th. He's got 19. He's got more home runs than Mike Trout. So, the batting average is eye-opening. I think he's got this uppercut swing that, when he makes contact, he does not get cheated, but I think is also his bat does not stay in the strike zone very long. So it just leaves a little margin for error. And when he connects, more often than not, he connects with it really, really well. So, it's working for him right now. I'm sure they would like the average to get a little higher. He did have a single on Sunday, and when he had the 2-home run game, he had a single to the left field, which they were really encouraged with. So, if he can get the average up a little bit, but even if he's hitting 200, it's hard to take a guy out of your lineup that's bashing home runs and driving in runs like that. So, yeah, just a weird deal when you have almost as many home runs as you do singles.
Yeah, that is a weird one. He's had a strange season. One guy who is he's strange in a good way. He's just an extraordinary talent for a 20-year-old, Carlos Correa. Since he's come up, he's hitting 300. He's got 4 home runs already, a few multi-hit games already. Eric Ibar maybe said it best the other day. So he looks like A-Rod and he plays like Trout. And that's pretty good praise overall. What's your takeaway now that he's been up for a few weeks? I know there's no surprise as far as the confidence standpoint, and this is a very confident kid. But it's certainly eye-catching when a kid comes up who is this highly touted and this young.
to live up to those expectations right from the get-go.
Yeah, Anthony, and he's done that, and I don't think anybody's surprised. I mean, nothing phases him. He's just he's been here all his life, and even by the way he, you know, in the clubhouse and around his teammates, you know, if you have to pick out who's the 20-year-old in here, didn't know anybody, you would say, well, not this guy. This guy's one of the veterans. He's been around. He's just has this presence about him, but he's just very under control. Everything he does is under control. His at-bats are under control. He's not out there trying to make plays to prove himself. He knows what he can do and can't do. And, you know, we all know he has a world of talent. On Saturday in Anaheim, he went over and got a chance to meet Albert Pujols, and I think Pujols was more excited to meet him than Correa was to meet Pujols. He said he grew up watching him since, you know, 5 years old in Puerto Rico. So, and I think he's going to get a lot of that around the league. And, you know, this week the Yankees are in Houston, and the A-Rod comparisons, maybe we'll get a chance to get a picture of him and A-Rod side to side and try to see who's who. But so far, so good with this kid, and I don't think it surprised everybody. He's going to be playing shortstop for the Astros for a long, long time.
Well, on the subject of big-name prospects, Mark Appel was promoted to AAA, struggled at the outset of the season at AA, made some improvements along the way. So he moves up a level. But what's the deal there, Tags? I thought the Astros just moved their pitchers from AA straight to the big leagues. This guy doesn't get to skip that step, huh?
Yeah, well, the way Velasquez and McCullers were pitching, they were actually dominating the AA, and, you know, McCullers has done up and done pretty well. Velasquez has been hit or miss, but, you know, like you said, Appel scuffled for a while, and it's just taken him a little bit longer than some of these other guys. And yeah, he has put together three or four good starts now, and, you know, I think deep down the Astros might not say this, but I think they feel some pressure to get Appel to the major leagues. I mean, you're talking about a number one overall pick who was a senior college player at one of the top conferences in the country, and 2 years later he's still in AA. I think they feel some pressure to push him up, and, you know, I think Mark is ready for a jump to the next level. I talked to him the other day, and he says he's getting more confidence by the day, and that he's throwing his fastball a little more early in the count, getting ahead early in the count. I mean, he was nitpicking a little bit. He was falling behind, and so I think Doug Brocale, the pitching coach at AA, he did so much great work with McCullers and Velasquez. It's helped Mark as well, and this is the next step for him. If he goes down there and has a good month, I think he could be a guy we see up here as well. We all know he has the stuff. He still throws 97, 98. His stuff is there. I think if he just learns to know what pitch to throw and what counts, and it is aggressive, you know, I think he can join some of these guys and could be started the rotation with him AA this year.
Colin McHugh, and on the subject of the rotation, Colin McHugh, he had a rough May, of course, and a rough first start in June, but his last couple outings, Tag, how encouraged are they that he's turned things around and can be an effective member of the staff, a standout member of the staff?
Well, they're very encouraged because they were depending on Keuchel and McHugh, and then they had Feldman, and then, like, you know, we'll figure out the rest after that. And if all of a sudden McHugh is not pitching well like he did in May, now you have problems, because now you have a hole in your rotation you weren't expecting. But yeah, his last two starts very promising. Yesterday he was just a defensive play away from maybe having a chance to go to the ninth and pitch a shutout in Anaheim. But kind of like Appel, they got him to establish his fastball a little bit more. He used his fastball more and attacked hitters a little bit more yesterday, which is what they wanted him to do. And, you know, two good starts under your belt. And, you know, you like to see him build on that because, you know, we all know the Astros need pitching. They're going to have to go get a guy in the rotation. And they don't need Colin McHugh to be struggling and then having more pitching problems. So, yeah, good signs that McHugh's put together back-to-back consecutive starts for sure.
It seems like Appel's promotion to AAA, him knocking on the door, that doesn't affect that deadline strategy at all. They're still one of those teams expected to beat the bushes in search of a starter, right?
Oh, yeah. They want a veteran guy in here. I mean, we know all the names that are out there, the Casimirs, Cuetos, Mike Leake. So, you know, I think those are the type of guys they're going to make a run at. And, you know, talking with some people in the organization, they would like to see it done sooner than later. Why wait for July 31st? I mean, if you're going to make a deal and send away some prospects, get him now, get him in early July where you can get an extra three or four starts out of him. So it's going to be interesting to see how quickly they do pull a deal, because a lot of people are going to be looking at the Casimirs and Cuetos. There's going to be a lot of teams looking for those guys. You know, who's going to be the right fit? Who can package the prospects? I think the Astros will be as aggressive as anybody.
And one last note, Tag. They signed their top pick, Alex Bregman, the shortstop. And I enjoyed in our story on MLB.com points out this kid, he turned an unassisted triple play at 5 years old. So he's got something in there. It's something something brewing there with Mr. Bregman.
Yeah, having a five-year-old who played ball, just to have the mental wherewithal to know what to do when you get the ball and get one out, much less three, is pretty impressive. But everybody you talk to about this kid just says he's just such a hard worker, a great ball player, a tough hitter. You know, now we get a chance to see it. I think he's going to sign actually today and get out in the minor league system. And he could be one of those quick movers. And we all know he's a shortstop, and the Astros have a pretty good shortstop. So that's going to be interesting to see. You know, obviously he's going to be a year or two away. But the more I talk to people about Bregman or read about him, it's just amazing. People talk about the makeup and just how dedicated he is to baseball and getting better. And like you said, started at 5 years old when he knew what to do in a situation like that. So, you know, maybe they have another special one on their hands with this guy.
Seems like it. All right. I want to thank Mr. McTaggart for joining us, and happy anniversary to you, Tags. And usually we're joined by T.R. Sullivan, but he's got a pinch hitter in for him this week. I want to thank Rangers radio voice Matt Hicks for joining us. Matt, first of all, let's start with Adrian Beltre. Returned to the Rangers lineup on Tuesday. And after missing 3 weeks with a sprained left thumb and kind of rushed his way back without a minor league rehab stint, obviously want to get back in there. What does he bring back to that lineup? Obviously, he's had to change his grip a bit to account for the thumb. What's all behind that?
Well, obviously, him getting back into the lineup. And first of all, Anthony, let me say I'm happy to sit in for a TR. I hope I can be up to his standards.
Okay.
Let me say this. With Beltre back in the lineup, his veteran presence, I think, is a huge help. And the fact that he's been put in the cleanup spot, hitting behind Prince Fielder. Prince is starting to see some better pitching already. So
yeah.
It might not be Adrian Beltre at 100%, but while he hasn't produced a lot of hits here in these first couple of games against Oakland, he's hit the ball hard. He does have a sac fly. We'd figure that the hits are going to start falling in soon. Yeah, he's made an adjustment to his swing, but he doesn't really look too much different to us.
Yeah, I know just to account for that thumb, he's had to bring his hands closer together, as you alluded to, and tape it up with athletic tape and use the shock-absorbing padding. So there's a lot going on there inside his batting glove. So hopefully that'll allow him to produce at the level we're accustomed to seeing from Mr. Beltre. But the other prominent return we're waiting on, Matt, Josh Hamilton. I know he's on rehab with the hamstring. What's the latest on him?
Well, he did play his first rehab game with Frisco yesterday. It was actually a day game, a morning game here in the Metroplex. It was super hot. He had a double. He had a walk. I've seen him a couple of times out on the field here with his throwing program. He looks fine. You know, I think he's fine. They just want to make sure that he's comfortable at the plate before they activate him again. And he's targeting, coming up this next week when we're in Baltimore. I don't think, given the injury, that they want him to try anything while we're in Toronto playing on the turf there. But I would expect that if all goes according to plan, that we would see Josh back in the lineup when we open up that four-game series in Baltimore.
Well, obviously, the next question off of that, once Hamilton comes back, what happens to Joey Gallo? I know they've talked about sending Gallo back down. His first 20 games or so here, we've seen the power. We've seen it come with the strikeouts, of course, as expected. But what are your thoughts, having watched him on a day-to-day basis, Matt? Just his readiness for a regular role here. Obviously, it's one of those too many cooks in the kitchen scenarios for the Rangers when they get everybody healthy. But just Gallo in general, how does he look to you at this level?
Well, let's start with the hitting first. From a fan perspective, and actually from a broadcaster perspective, it's can't miss TV. You've got to watch. You got to put down what you're doing when Joey Gallo comes up. Yeah, he strikes out a ton, and his strikeout rate has been higher here since coming to the big leagues. But the five home runs he's hit, four of them have been here at Globe Life Park, three of them into the upper home run porch.
Yeah.
They've been prodigious shots. The one that he hit on the road, he hit off of Clayton Kershaw, the second longest home run hit off of Clayton Kershaw. So, I mean, there's a chance there for some really eye-popping type stuff. And the question becomes, where do you balance that out? Is he striking out too much Has he not really fully adjusted to major league pitching? The other aspect of Gallo's play is, yeah, Beltre's back, so he's not going to play at third. But Gallo's had the opportunity to play in the outfield. And, you know, we've heard the Rangers talk about his athleticism and perhaps that his athleticism might be able to transcend any shortcomings he has playing in the outfield. And so far, that really has been the case. He really has made some nice plays in left field. He's got a terrific arm, so he can, you know, throw guys out. In fact, he threw a guy out yesterday making a play in left field. So, you know, I don't know as though it's an automatic that when Hamilton comes back that Gallo will be the guy to go out. You know, there's so many other things that are at play here. Delino DeShields is currently on the DL, maybe soon to start a rehab assignment. Shin-Soo Chu hasn't played in the first couple of games in this series. He is in the lineup today against Oakland, dealing with some back spasms. So, you know, it's not a hard and fast, you know, result that Hamilton's up, Gallo's down. You just have to wait and see how things play out by the time that Josh is ready to come back.
How about another rookie, Matt, who's made a big impact on his club, Chichi Gonzalez? Obviously, he had his first rough start this week, but, you know, the four before that were just unbelievable. Big boost to the rotation there from Chichi. Has he opened up some eyes? Has he surprised some people? What's been the take on his performance here in his first five starts?
I think he certainly opened some eyes. You know, I was impressed when I first saw him in spring training this year. I can remember that it was a game that we didn't broadcast, and so I had the opportunity just to sit behind home plate to watch. And the first thing that stood out to me was the movement that he had on all of his pitches, how everything moved. And I remembered it was a game against the A's, and he struck out Sam Fold early in the ball game. And I couldn't wait to ask him about the pitch because the radar gun was at 93, and it looked like a cutter. It looked like a pitch that just dove in to Fold swinging from the left side. And I'm like, that's an unhittable pitch. Nobody can hit that pitch. And when I asked him about it, he told me that, and a lot of people talk about Chichi's cutter, he doesn't throw a cutter. When we asked him that, he said specifically, I don't throw a cutter. I don't have a cutter grip. He goes, when I throw my four-seam fastball, it naturally cuts in to left-handed hitters. And I'm thinking to myself, that is a devastating pitch. And you know, when you talk to the catchers, Robinson Chirinos and Carlos Corcoran, that's what they talk about is how much movement he has on his pitches. He's not that he's overpowering, and he's not a strikeout guy. He'll get contact. What he's trying for is that contact off the barrel to get the ball in play. We've seen a lot of ground ball outs from him. You know, he's got a very good two-seam fastball as well. He just has action on all of his pitches. The last outing, he wasn't throwing quality strikes. He wasn't putting the ball where he wanted to. And so clearly, if you're missing your spots and you're a contact guy, you can get hit. But I think more often than not, this is a guy that knows how to pitch. He's very savvy for his age, and I think that there's a bright future ahead for Chichi.
It certainly looks that way, and it leads to the bigger discussion about this Rangers rotation. You know, there's been a lot of attention paid this week to some reports about Cole Hamels and them, you know, maintaining those discussions with the Phillies. And we know that the Rangers are probably one of the few teams that have the resources in terms of trade chips to pull off something that dramatic. But at the same time, you know, they've got some guys working their way back from injury, and Matt Harrison is getting closer in his return from the spinal fusion surgery. So what are your thoughts on the outlook for the rotation here with the trade deadline looming about a month away?
Well, you know, I think if you take a look at the Rangers' history under general manager John Daniels, you shouldn't be surprised by anything that happens, or by that same token, by something if it doesn't happen. JD has always been willing to do whatever it takes to improve the team, not only in the short term, but in the long run as well. So the fact that there's all this talk about Hamels possibly being added to the team is not a surprise at all. I think from an observer's standpoint, you know, us that get the chance to watch the team every day, you know, what these guys have been able to do in the rotation has been terrific. It's the reason why the Rangers are sitting over 500 right now, despite the fact that the team has lost its last four. You know, acquiring Wandy Rodriguez and what Wandy has been able to do, save for his outing on Saturday. what Chichi Gonzalez has been able to do since coming up, what Colby Lewis has been able to do, you know, ever since returning last year. When you take a look at his second half of the season last year and what he's done this year, I mean, he's simply been amazing. This is a pitching staff that right now doesn't really need help in the rotation. Where it needs help is everything in between in the bullpen getting up to the closer. If you take a look at the Rangers team relief ERA, it's 14th in the American League. Only the Oakland A's have a worse ERA. So while Sean Tolleson has done a very good job at the back end of the bullpen, 10 saves and 10 chances, it's been getting there that's been the problem. And not that everybody's been poor, because I think we've seen flashes of brilliance from the young right-hander, the rookie Keone Kella, who's got three quality pitches. Tanner Sheppers here has looked good his last three times out, but shaky prior to that. You know, Ross Detweiler, who was in the rotation to begin the year, but is now one of two long guys coming out of the bullpen. He, from the left side, has not been what the Rangers have expected. You know, I think that if the Rangers are looking for some outside help in terms of pitching, that it might be more to the team's advantage to be looking at acquiring somebody there toward the back end of the bullpen to you know, help out in getting to Sean Tolleson.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we're getting closer. Less than 40 days to go until the trade deadline. And the Rangers are one of those interesting teams to watch because of that lineup. And we've seen what it can mean in this AL West. And I want to thank Matt Hicks for joining us. I think you did a good job, Matt. I think TR would be proud. I am joined by Alden Gonzalez. And Alden, everybody in baseball is talking about what Albert Pujols has done this past month or so. You've seen it firsthand night after night. What has gotten into the machine?
I think maybe progression to the mean, maybe something like that. I remember talking to him, Anthony. It was around mid-May, and his batting average was about 230. And you could just see that he was kind of hitting the ball pretty hard, and he was probably hitting the ball a little bit harder than his numbers had shown. And, you know, he talked about how he doesn't really worry if he's he doesn't really worry about what his numbers are if he's not striking out and if he's not rolling over, meaning getting out in front on outside pitches and hitting these weak ground balls to the left side, which he's prone to do when he's struggling. And, look, Albert Pujols is batting .210 on balls in play in the middle of May. His strikeout rate looked the same as it always has. I mean, he wasn't walking as much, but he hasn't walked at a high rate for a while now. But you just kind of figured that maybe there was a run like this in him, but I don't think anybody would have ever expected to see the Albert Pujols that we've seen of late. I mean, you know, he went on a really, really good run in 2012. After he went his first month and a half with the Angels without a home run and was batting below 200, he went on a ridiculous run in June, July, and August to get his numbers back to being pretty darn respectable by the end of the year. But he's never gone on a run like this. And it's everybody keeps talking about the home runs, you know, 15 home runs in a 25-game stretch. He struck out five times in those 25 games. I think that is by far the most impressive thing, especially when you look at this day and age with guys being so comfortable with 150, 180 strikeout-a-year performances. He's just been locked in on every pitch. And, you know, he had a two-homer game the other night after his second home run. 35,000 fans at Angel Stadium were chanting Albert Pujols. You know, that's the first time I've ever heard that at Angel Stadium. I'm sure it happened a lot in St. Louis, but this is a guy who's, you know, he's worked his butt off, but he's just, you know, he's battled some injuries. He's battled some slumps here and there. He's battled the natural regression of aging, and everybody keeps wondering unfairly if he's going to continue to put up the numbers that he did in St. Louis, and obviously he's just not that player anymore. But even at 35, to be able to do this and, you know, for the Angels fans to be able to see the kind of runs he used to go on pretty much on a monthly basis earlier in his career, I think it's been pretty cool for the fans out here.
Yeah, it's very real stuff, too. He's not just capitalizing on mistakes over the middle. He's driving a lot of balls from the outer third of the plate. He's not pulling the ball that much. He's hitting a lot of his power has gone to dead center. Hit a lot of off-speed pitches out. So he's just been, geez. You say obviously he's not going to be the player he was in St. Louis, but he has been for a few weeks here at least. It's been a lot of fun to watch. But on the flip side of that is just the overall inconsistency of the offense from the Halos this season. I saw on our budget for today, Alden, I don't think I've seen the story yet, but the question is how have they gone from one of the best offenses in baseball to one of the worst, and what can be done to fix it? That's our budget line for MLB.com. So I want to know, how have they gone from one of the best to one of the worst?
Well, there's so many reasons for it, Anthony. And you know what? It's so easy to – the big storyline going into the year was, all right, look, they don't know if they're ever going to have anything from Josh Hamilton, which ended up being nothing because they traded him, and they don't have Howie Kendrick. And, you know, can this offense be the same? And it's weird because – Johnny Giovitella, who has taken Howie Kendrick's place, is actually equaled the production of Howie Kendrick so far. I mean, I don't know if that's sustainable, obviously, but he's been fine. And Josh Hamilton, you know, maybe, you could argue he was a presence in the middle of the order, big left-handed bat, whatever. He didn't really provide nothing either. But the Angels also went long stretches without Cole Calhoun and David Fries last year. They led the majors in runs, per game. They had an adjusted OPS above average from every single one of their starting position players, and surprising that also included Josh Hamilton. They're just a juggernaut. And this year, I mean, I think Wednesday was a perfect snapshot of it. You know, they go 12 and two-thirds innings scoring one run, and then it's just, you know, it's an off the end of the bat little flare that wins them a game. They've become a team with very little margin for error, a team that's whose success is completely reliant on the success of its pitching staff. And, you know, I think a big reason for the struggles has been the fact that Matt Joyce and Chris Iannetta, two of the few guys in that lineup who actually have a walk in their game, have decided to have the worst years of their careers. And it's hard to bounce back from that because they were two guys who were supposed to really deepen the lineup, you know, get them some production in the 6, 7, 8, and 9 spots. And, you know, Mike Sosha's tried pretty much everything. You know, he moved Trout to third and Albert to fourth for the first time. He's tried Efren Navarro, Johnny Giovitella, Eric Ibar in the leadoff spot. He even hit Ibar fourth and Giovitella fifth one day. But really, this offense has just become Mike Trout and Albert Pujols and everybody else. And I think the scariest thing about this, Anthony, is that they don't really know where to turn. They don't know where to get bats. Everybody keeps waiting for this big elixir that's going to fix the offense. They're waiting on Jerry Dipoto to make this big move. And, you know, the Angels do have some payroll flexibility now with the money that they saved on Josh and the savings that they had going into the year. But there's just nowhere to turn right now to get offense. The Brewers and Phillies are probably the only two real sellers in baseball right now. And, you know, the Angels do like Ben Revere. They do like Adam Lind. They'd actually like to get both of those guys. But both of those teams are kind of holding out, waiting to see if somebody else is going to have a major injury and waiting to see if they could get more for these guys because it's still not even the end of June. And offense overall is just completely down in this game. So it's just a really bad time for the Angels to be in the market for bats. And, look, maybe the market will open up in 2 or 3 weeks. Maybe things change dramatically before the trade deadline. But as of right now, the Angels have been trying to get offense all year, and they just have no idea who they can get it from. And their best bet right now is for Joyce and Iannetta to progress to the mean, for David Fries to do better with runners in scoring position, because David Fries has had more opportunities with runners in scoring position than anybody in that lineup because he's been hitting directly behind Albert Pujols, and he's batting .230. He just isn't driving runs in. Eric Ibar has to get hot again. I mean, as of right now, it's scary to think, but it's going to happen internally. And after a while, you start to wonder if it's even in this group. I mean, it's crazy to wonder that after they led the majors in runs last year, but here we are, almost 3 full months completed, and this offense has shown absolutely no signs of consistency yet.
Well, Alden, I think they should go out and get Ryan Howard and DH him against right-handers. That would help their production against right-handers, help their production at DH spot. And with Howard and Pujols, you'd have the best lineup of 2008. I think they'd be in good shape there. The Phillies are going to pay for that contract. I'm not willing to chip in. But the Phillies will pay for a lot of that contract to move Ryan Howard. But let's talk about a different trade acquisition. Say what? Yeah. Yeah. They are. That's very true. Very true. Let's talk about a young guy they acquired over the winter, Andrew Heaney. Struggled in spring training, tried to lock down a rotation job, wasn't able to do so. His numbers at AAA weren't that great. I know some of that is the PCL effect, the Pacific Coast League. But they call him up, and he holds the Astros to a run on 4 hits in 6 innings with 5 strikeouts and a walk. Very nice start for him. He'll go again Tuesday. Can he pitch his way into a permanent spot in this rotation, in your opinion?
Yeah, without a doubt. You're right. The numbers in AAA look bad. You kind of take PCL numbers with a grain of salt. I talked to the director of player development recently about Andrew Heaney, and he felt like he's ready. He's ready for the opportunity right now. And that he has seen him pitch in AAA, and his stuff looks good. His delivery is in line to home plate, which was the big adjustment they were trying to make with him in spring training. And, I mean, he's their guy. They gave up Howie Kendrick to get him. He is by far the best prospect in their system. They haven't really had a talented left-handed starter like that in a while, aside from Sean Newcomb, who they just drafted. But he's going to continue to get an opportunity. He's got a nice and easy delivery. He locates well. Fastball mostly in the mid-90s. Got a good breaking ball. He's got a great changeup. And he's going to take the ball every fifth day. It's interesting because the Angels have a bunch of off days coming up now. So, you know, Jared Weaver, who's on the DL right now, Andrew Heaney came up because Jared Weaver has a bad hip. But it's not supposed to be so serious. Jared Weaver could come back as late as July 21st and still just miss only 2 starts. And the Angels haven't said that for sure, but I feel like they're kind of targeting him for that date. And it's interesting because I think by that point, there's a very good chance that the Angels will have traded one of their starting pitchers, one of their major league starting pitchers. And I think that will be the avenue for Andrew Heaney to remain in the rotation, obviously, if he continues to pitch well. But they have a lot of stock in this kid. And as we talked about earlier, with the Angels need to get a bat, their best bet to get a bat right now is to trade one of their major league starters, whether that's Hector Santiago, whether that's DJ Wilson, a guy that they sort of shopped in the offseason as well. I expect one of their major league starters to not be there anymore by July 21st, and Andrew Heaney will continue to pitch in the rotation if he keeps pitching well. The best way that they're going to get a bat right now is to trade one of their starting pitchers because they actually do have some young guys coming up to the system. The question is who's going to want them and where is it fit?
I got to ask, since you see Hector Santiago every fifth day, I don't. How does he have a 2.68 ERA given some of the other peripherals? Obviously, he's given up a lot of home runs. He walks a fair amount of guys. How has he been able to limit the damage here?
Anthony, I don't think anybody's really been able to put their finger around it. I think he's just mastered the art of stranding runners. Is that something that people actually do? I really don't know what it is. He's been a really pleasant surprise for them. I can tell you that he really does have some good stuff. He pitched out of the bullpen in Chicago a lot, so maybe he's got that reliever's mentality of kind of being comfortable with pitching with guys on base. You're right. His peripherals don't look very good. He's always going to be a guy who walks guys at a high rate. This was a guy who, going into the year, he had to fight to get a rotation spot. He was battling Heaney and Nick Tropiano, another young guy that they got in the offseason, for that fifth spot in the rotation. And he's been their best starting pitcher so far. At least if you only look at ERA, he's been their best starting pitcher so far. And you know what? His name has come up a lot in trade conversations. I've heard the Angels don't really want to trade him because he's a cheap commodity. He's controllable for 3 more years. And their best look going into the year and something that they still want to explore is Hector Santiago helping them in the bullpen. They feel like he could be a big weapon, a left-handed guy who could maybe match up against some left-handed hitters. I could see that as a role for him moving forward. But right now, I mean, you cannot justify taking him out of the rotation.
No, you can't. And the rotation has to remain a strength for this club because the offense, aside from the machine himself, has not been coming consistently. I want to thank Alden Gonzalez for joining us to talk about all that. I'm going to bring in our friend Greg Johns to talk about what's going on with this club. Greg, I don't think it's any great shock, or I don't think there's any mystery as to why the Mariners might have changed hitting coaches, but I think some people were surprised at the specific name brought in, Edgar Martinez, the great hitter, of course. What was behind this move, both from his perspective and from their perspective?
Yeah, it's pretty simple on the why. You just don't have a team with that high of expectations that doesn't hit for as long as they've not hit and not feel the need for some change. And it always seems the hitting coach is that first guy to go. And Howard Johns, a pretty popular guy with the players and things, but they just haven't produced. And when you've got an Edgar Martinez waiting in the wings, and people didn't really, I don't think, know he was waiting, and it's just kind of the way Edgar is. Quiet guy.
Right.
He's been in the organization, kind of helping out with the minor league guys this year a little more. He's gone down to spring training for a number of years and kind of helped out just spot basis. But this year was kind of helping out and let them know not that he was like hawking that job in particular, but that he was interested in getting back in the organization in the future. And I think it just kind of made sense when they said we need to make a move, and we got one of the greatest hitters. Certainly in Mariners history and in the American League for a good number of years with the Mariners, a quality guy, a quality bat, and a guy they think is a pretty good instructor and can help, teach, particularly mentor the young kids, but also that veteran presence that even Robinson Cano says, that's a guy I got to listen to. He commands that respect. So that was the move. The why is pretty simple. I mean, they just haven't scored. This team, 22 of their last 28 games, they scored three runs or less, and that's not the formula you want to win baseball games with. So, they've got to figure out that hitting. It's been kind of a long-running problem. Edgar, the 11th hitting coach in the past 13 years, so it's been a spinning cycle there, and they've kind of got to get it figured out.
Yeah, it's like Marlins managers, Mariners hitting coaches. They cycle through a lot of those guys. He, of course, had a 418 on base percentage for his career, which is pretty crazy. And this is a team that just basically doesn't get on base, so maybe he can impart some wisdom there. But Mike Zunino is one of his greatest challenges. He's striking out more than 40% of his plate appearances. What's going on with him, and what's it going to take to get him on track?
Yeah, that's been a big disappointment. Not behind the plate, because he is everything they want as a catcher, but really thought Mike was going to take a good step forward this year at the plate, and it just hasn't happened. He had a sensational spring, and I guess we all once again look at what spring training means, because he was just phenomenal in the spring and doing everything they wanted with a two-strike approach and going off the field and all these things they wanted to work on. And when the season came on, all that kind of went away, and here he is sitting almost halfway through the season, hitting the .165 with a .236 on base. He's a better hitter than that. He was a very good hitter in college at Florida. I mean, and he's got power. Even that has only flashed a little bit this year. He's got 7 homers and 16 RBIs. They're not worried about the power. They just want him to be more consistent, get on base, go the other way, and not be an automatic out in that lineup. I still think, and I like that he's a great kid. He's a hard worker. He knows what he's trying to do. It's just kind of locked up, and maybe he's one of those guys Edgar can help. But it's interesting, you talk about what a hitting coach can make in a different voice. And as Zunino said the first day when Edgar came on, and he'd barely even been with the team, and Zunino said the first thing he did, he ran into him in the cage, and Edgar started putting balls on tees, different spots where Mike said, that's just not his place. I normally think I can get to a ball. Edgar's approach was, here, he likes using tees. He likes the tee work, putting balls in places and making you reach for them, get comfortable in different places. And Zunino said it was a different approach, and he welcomed it. So it doesn't happen overnight, though. You don't change everything in 5 days, and it's going to take some time, so we'll see how the long term works for Edgar. But certainly Zunino is one of the young guys that he will be focusing on at great length.
Hey Greg, it was great to see Franklin Gutierrez get back to the big leagues. I covered this guy way back when in Cleveland. He was such a key for the Indians in their 2007 run to the ALCS. when he took over that right field job. But he's had a lot of health issues since then, and spinal nerve condition prevented him from playing much last year. But they bring him up basically to hit some lefties. Kind of a feel-good story there to see him back in the big leagues.
Yeah, it's great. You know, Franklin's one of those guys when he was healthy and at his best, just a pleasure to watch. The smooth center fielder and a gold glover out there for the Mariners. And it kind of got off the rails health-wise. Just seemed like a lot of bad things happening. And looking back on it, a lot of it is traced back to the nerve condition he had. And it's just a problem in his hips and lower body that causes some digestive problems and all kinds of things. He sat out completely last year, was out of baseball, and you know, really didn't know if he'd even get back in it. Came out to spring training this year and just to see how things went, and went down to Tacoma and just been hitting the ball pretty well. He doesn't run like he used to, but he can still get down the line, beat out an infield single in his first hit last night, his first game up. So he's a guy, they're going to play him in left field. He's not the guy that's going to cover center like he used to, but he can get out there and left. And the key there, they got rid of Ricky Weeks and Justin Ruggiano in the last few weeks, guys that just weren't hitting. So they needed a right-handed bat to kind of balance that lineup. They're just a lefty-heavy lineup. So he's a guy that'll come up, and he'll play left field against left-handed pitchers. And he's not going to be in there every day, which is probably a good situation for Goody. He's not a guy that can play every day. But you spot him, good veteran guy, nice bat, and good guy to have around. So, yeah, it'll be fun to see Franklin how he can do. Certainly still young enough at 32 to be a capable guy if he can stay healthy and stay out there. So, we'll see how that goes with Franklin. But definitely good to see him back in the big leagues.
Speaking of right-handed bats, Nelson Cruz, boy, he dislocated his pelvic bone earlier this week. That does not sound pleasant at all. Of course, made it back to the lineup. But interesting dynamic during the All-Star voting. And of course, they were just facing this guy, Kendry Morales, a former Mariner. But that's one of several places, I think, in the AL All-Star voting where a Royal has taken over, and you kind of wonder about, you know, who they're leading. Nelson Cruz certainly deserving of that spot.
Yeah, and I'd like to think, he narrowed the voting gap last week quite a bit.
Yeah.
And he like to hope maybe that for fairness sake that the common sense takes over and the bulk of the voters can get back behind Cruz, because numbers-wise, I don't think there's much of a question there. He's had an outstanding first half, and he's cooled off a little recently, but you're still sitting there with 19 bombs and hitting .303 and a .920 OPS and slugging .550. I mean, he's everything you would hope for when the Mariners signed him. He's done everything for this club, and certainly he's not the reason they're not hitting. He's been the one shining light in that and deserves to be an all-star starter. I don't think there's any question. So we'll see maybe his last week, 10 days, whatever it is in the voting, that maybe he can get pushed in there. I have no doubt that he's going to be on that all-star team, but he does deserve to start.
Kind of on the flip side there, Greg, a guy who, of course, started slow and famously so, but the last seven games, Robinson Cano he's hitting .346 with a .577 slugging percentage. Do you think he's finally heating up? Is this a real stretch here?
Well, you got to hope so. He's still sitting here almost mid-season with three homers and 23 RBIs, and that is not Robinson Cano. That's not anything of what he expected or they expected. And he has heated up. He hit a homer the other day. He's hit the ball hard. Starting to get some results. And they need him. I mean, there's no doubt. You put him with Cruz, and then you got a pretty good situation there. And that's how they've built this whole roster. And my dog's all for it too.
That's your assistant.
Got somebody at the door. But anyway, you get Cano, Cruz, and Seager, that 3, 4, 5, and that's really what this whole franchise has been built around. So we'll see if they can keep that going, and that's certainly the key, as we mentioned. You can't win with three runs a game, and they've got to do a better job than that.
Absolutely. That's been the key of the whole season. Well, Greg, we'll let you get back to your dog there and your intruder, it sounds like. I thank you for joining us. I am joined by Jane Lee. And the A's are beginning a 10-game homestand with the Royals, Rockies, and Mariners after a successful trip to Texas. And really, it's been a successful June overall, Jane. What has been the key to the A's finally hitting their stride here?
I think we're just kind of finally seeing them, you know, play baseball without all the errors, all the bullpen mistakes that we saw those first couple of months. You know, I think everyone was wondering during that time, you know, is this a better baseball team than we're seeing, or is this just who we are or who they are? And you know, I think they are a better team than their record indicates. And I think because they did play in so many close games, so many one-run games, you know, those errors, all the bullpen miscues, they really did end up haunting them. And you're seeing it with their record now. And right now you're not seeing as many of those miscues, and they're just playing good baseball. I mean, their starting pitching has always been good. And I think over the last 30 games, their ERA from their starters is something like 2.30, which really is just crazy. But it hasn't been just 1 month. It's been throughout. And so they've always known that they have that in their back pockets, you know, and their offense is getting going. I think that might be the most surprising part, because I'm not sure this was a lineup that was expected to, you know, scored many runs, but their offense is, you know, complementing the pitching well, and you're just not seeing those mistakes that were really hurting them early on.
Billy Burns has been a big key to that offense as we record this going into the series finale with Texas. He got a 14-game hitting streak. He's at 375 with 12 runs scored and 5 stolen bases in that stretch. What have you seen there from Mr. Burns there, Jane?
He's just fast. I mean, that's how he gets on base. I think nearly, you know, a third of his hits are infield hits, and you see it day in, day out. And, you know, for a time, he was swinging at his first pitch and getting on base right away, and I think pitchers caught on to that. So he's not doing that as much, but he's still, I mean, he's a contact guy, and he just kind of finds his way on base. He's just the spark plug they need right there, especially with Coco Crisp being out. I really think that, you know, when Crisp went out, this was a major concern for this team, because usually Coco's the one that gets their wheels going. But, I mean, Burns has been, I mean, as consistent of a hitter as anyone in their lineup. And you have to think, you know, if he has a different name, I mean, I think everyone knows that the Joey Gallos and the Carlos Correas, but, I mean, Billy Burns should be in consideration. I know it's still early, but when you're talking about, you know, rookie of the year candidates, I mean, it's really something what he's doing. If you were going down a list, you know, of all those rookies, and there's a lot of good ones in the game right now, but if you were to cover up the names, you know, and simply look at the numbers, I'd have to think that, you know, he stands out at the top of that list.
Well, you can't change his name, Jane. Billy Burns is too perfect for a guy with speed on the base pass. It's just too great. We need a different last name for Billy Butler. I don't know what verb we could give to Billy Butler as far as his work on the base pass. But Ben Zobrist, you know, I think last time I did one of these A's podcasts with you a couple weeks ago, we were talking about how they really other teams are going to need to see more from him if he's going to be a trade chip. And we'll get into the trade thing discussion in a moment, because it might be a different equation for the A's altogether now. But Zobrist has really turned things around. He's last 10 games, he's batting 400 with 3 home runs and 10 RBIs and 15 runs scored. Is this just a matter of the guy getting his legs back under him after that knee surgery?
Yeah, I think it is. I think he was a little hesitant coming back. And A said all along, you know, we didn't rush him back. If we didn't feel like he was healthy, we wouldn't have put him out there. But I think, you know, the mental game is just as big as the physical part. And for him, I think he could sense some hesitation when he was out there, whether it was at the plate or, you know, at second base or in the outfield. You know, just very worried about what could happen, you know, or if he could re-injure the knee. And now that he's no longer thinking about that or feeling that, you know, he's getting back to what we saw him doing at the start of the season. And really, I mean, what he's doing, you mentioned, you know, batting 400 over the last 10 games. The A's have won 8 of those games, and I don't think that's, you know, coincidence. I mean, he's such a big part of their offense. Maybe not on other teams, you know, a number 3 hitter, but on this club, that's what he's doing. And, you know, you have a guy like that in there and him doing what he is doing, a big part of why this offense has been so good of late. And, you know, talking about him as a trade chip, I mean, this only helps their case if that's what they decide to do.
Yeah, and on the trade front, Billy Beane doesn't typically punt a season away. In his tenure, the A's have never lost fewer than 74 games in a season. You know, they never had one of those total outright rebuild type years. And a lot of people I know earlier this year were expecting them maybe to be one of the more active teams before the deadline. You know, now you start to wonder. I mean, they're still, as we record this, they're still 9 games back in the division, 7 back of the wild card. But, you know, you always wonder, especially where they're at in terms of run differential, if they are definitely a slam dunk seller the way people might have thought a couple weeks ago.
You know, it seems like they're going to hold off. I mean, honestly, if you had asked me this last week or even 2 weeks ago, you know, what they were going to do, I probably would have bet that, you know, a trade was coming sooner than later. And now I think they're just kind of on standby with all this because, you know, they see that there's parity in the division. I think that has a lot to do with it. The fact that the Astros hit some bumps of late, and, you know, the Angels and Mariners are having their own struggles. The Rangers haven't been as consistent lately. And they do feel like they can compete in this division. And, you know, they are 9 games back as of today. But they were 13 games back at the end of June in 2012 and ended up winning their division then. And I think when you have seasons like that and you've been through that, maybe you do wait a little longer because you know how quickly things can change. And for them right now, I think their focus is just kind of getting back to 500. They really want to get there and then see what's next. But at the same time, I mean, they do have to start thinking about it because they have 3 really valuable guys who they could get, you know, a good return for. Scott Kazmir, Tyler Clifford, Ben Zobrist. And if you let the deadline pass without doing anything, you know, at the end of the year, was it worth it to hang on to them for this amount of time? And right now, they feel like those 3 guys, you know, they need them if they're going to continue this thing. And they feel like right now it is too soon to start, you know, trading away those guys. Now, that's not to say they haven't been discussing trades. I think they've, you know, talked to several teams, notably about Zobrist, just because he is so valuable. And I mean, you have to think that any contending team is calling on a guy like that, a guy that can play so many different positions for you while also, you know, providing a quality bat. So, you know, it's something to keep an eye on, definitely. But, I mean, I think for anyone thinking that, you know, well, the A's are done, well, it's just not true. Like you said, you know, Beam's just not the type to throw anything away. You know, he's never been that way. And they're always going to compete. So it'll be interesting. But right now there is still a feeling in the clubhouse and within the front office that, you know, they can keep turning things around.
Well, on the trade front, of course, the big move they made over the winter was trading away Josh Donaldson. He's having a huge season for Toronto, maybe even a MVP-type season here so far. And I think early on it would be pretty safe to say the Blue Jays had, quote-unquote, won that trade. And we all know what a moving target the win or lose a trade can be. But and maybe that target is moving now. Kendall Graveman and Brett Laurie, the way they play here this month. Let's talk about Graveman, first of all. He had a terrible first month of the season, 8.27 ERA in his first 4 starts. But now going back to May 23rd, his 7-start stretch, he's got 2.31 ERA. So what's the difference between those 2 versions of Kendall Graveman?
I think it was just him. I mean, it sounds, you know, maybe so easy or cliche, but him just getting comfortable and getting confidence here. I mean, a year ago, you know, when he came up and started the season with the A's, you know, a year ago he was in single A. This is his first time in a big league rotation and, you know, the first time he ever experienced failure. And when that happened, I mean, he really crumbled. He let everything get to him. Couldn't make in-game adjustments. He was very emotional after games. And I think going down, you know, realized he had to kind of toughen up and make the adjustments necessary if he wanted to get back here. He did that, came back, and really, I mean, he looked like the guy they saw in spring training. I think he allowed just 1 run in 25 spring training innings, and, you know, he has that sinker ball he has, it's so effective. And, you know, if he's got that going for him, which he didn't early in the season, you know, he's been very efficient with that, gets a lot of ground balls. And now you're seeing him go deep in the games. His first few outings with the A's, you know, could barely make it to the 5th inning. Now he's completing at least 6 every time, and as of late, 7 and 8 innings. So, I mean, it really has been a remarkable turnaround for him. And I think it's encouraging, not just for him, but for the A's, because, like you said, I mean, giving up a guy like Donaldson, that's not easy to do. And I'm not sure, you know, their thoughts about it now, but to have the return in a guy like Graveman, who is pitching very well, and Brett Laurie, I mean, Laurie's batting nearly 400 this month, and really has been, you know, kind of projecting upward the whole season offensively, and defensively, he's done some good things as well. He's not Josh Donaldson, but they are getting production from, you know, those two guys, and pretty soon, I think, you know, they will also have Sean Nolan, who was also in that trade, you know, be part of their pitching staff as well.
And durability from Laurie, which has probably been his most durable season in the big leagues so far. I mean, it's only mid-June here, so, or late June, I should say. But we'll see if that continues for Mr. Laurie, and we'll see if the A's can continue their recent run. All right, that's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, American League West Edition.